Looks very familiar. I remember writing my name on the line there at the bottom as when I was a little ranger. Even as a young child, I already had an intuitive draw toward nature, and that was why, no doubt, my lower middle class parents were willing to pay for a subscription, because if I wasn't going to use it, I wasn't going to get one. And the magazine helped reinforce the beauty and awe and love for nature that my childhood intuition and spirit were already feeling. And this is something I've never lost. Ranger Rick deepened my awareness of and my passion about biodiversity loss. This is an aspect of humanity's relationship to nature I found particularly painful as a child, and I still do. The situation is far, far worse now than it was in my childhood. Currently, every 20 minutes, the world gains another 3,500 human beings, but we lose one or more species of animal or plant life, roughly 27,000 species per year. 27,000 per year. At the present rate of extinction, as much as 20% of the world's species could be gone in the next 30 years. I want to take a guess at when it was that the Earth last saw this rate of extinction? Age of dinosaurs, 65 million years ago. The rate of extinction is equal to that. Now, some people, doubters, might say, oh, well, this is evolution. This is natural processes at work. We've had mass extinctions 5 times in the Earth's geologic past. So is that what's happening now? No, that's clearly not what's happening now. What we're experiencing now is not nature just doing its thing. The current rate of extinction is estimated at anywhere from 100 to 1,000 times greater than what nature does. Take a guess why. Well, not me personally, all of us, human beings. Since the end of the last ice age, we've behaved as global super predators and landscape engineers. Our overconsumption, deforestation, habitat destruction, purposeful introduction of invasive species, spread of diseases, general manipulation of environments, all of those things have radically impacted food webs and ecosystems on every piece of land and on every piece of water. Our impact has gotten particularly acute in the last 2 centuries due to a global population explosion. In 1800, the human population was about 1 billion. Today, we've risen to 7.5, and it's continuing to go up. This has resulted in growing habitat loss, overfishing, poaching, increased numbers of people in poverty, the spread of industrialized food and monoculture to help keep pace with the demand. All of those things have taken significant tolls on biodiversity. To put it simply, we are eating the planet toward greater extinctions. Now, clearly, there's no way to reverse what has happened. Extinction is forever. What we need is a national shift, and in fact, a global shift in how we think about our planet and how we treat our planet. Now, that's a big project, and it's not going to happen anytime soon. But there are some small steps that we can take now to make the current situation a bit less dire. And of course, when many people make small changes, they do add up to big change. So the first thing we can do is to continue to strengthen a narrative that calls us to be spiritual stewards of our planet, not economic dominators of our planet. Our own seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part. That's a spiritual iteration of that kind of a sentiment. As Forrest Gilmore, author of The Seven Principles in Word and Worship, put it, the seventh principle speaks against the dangers of individualism and oppression, and it puts us in touch with that which is greater than ourselves. What is greater than ourselves is this miraculous planet we inhabit, all of its ecosystems, and all of the beings that inhabit those ecosystems. The loss of species, the loss and reduction of biodiversity, that is a loss to us all. And in fact, the ecological ramifications of that are something we can't entirely predict. It's not going to be good. We can predict that. But just how devastating it could be, it's hard to say. Because when we begin to pull out strands of that interdependent web, there may come a point where all we have is a handful of loose strings amid a collapsed ecosystem. Well, beyond becoming a better spiritual steward and changing our narratives about how we relate to the planet, there are also some things we can do internationally. When we do what we can to combat global poverty, patronize fair trade, stand with those in the global south, it reduces the rate of biodiversity loss. Because when we combat global poverty, and when we support global reproductive rights, it means that peoples in the global south can adequately feed and provide for themselves and be in better control of the size of their families. It means they'll be less tempted to poach endangered species, or to clear-cut their land to raise livestock, or to be leveraged into making decisions that aren't in their long-term economic or environmental interests. Now, financially supporting organizations that combat global poverty or promote reproductive rights, right, buying fair trade goods when we can, that's not something that is in the economic means of all of us. What each of us can do at home on a daily basis is to create change through all the choices that we make. If we reduce our overall consumption and carbon footprint, that contributes to slowing the rate of biodiversity loss. The less things that we consume, whatever the thing is, the less energy, the less land, the less resources it takes to produce that thing. Reducing our use of chemicals at home, that could be a way to contribute as well. Buy organic foods if you're able to afford them. Right? We'll reduce the use of chemicals in agriculture. Refusing to buy products made with fur, ivory, tortoiseshell, or any animal products. And in fact, those industries that use fur and ivory and snakeskin and tortoiseshells and so on have gotten more clever about it, where many people might be repulsed at a shoulder-to-floor fur coat, they don't get repulsed by fur trim, right? Or a little bit of snakeskin on it, right? So they've gotten sneakier at putting little bits that don't repulse us as much as, right, popping into face as much. The toll is the same on animals. Now, I do appreciate that not everyone in our country is an overconsumer. Poverty does keep some people in a state of forced underconsumption. But for those of us who are blessed enough to have enough, or to even have more than enough, our overconsumption is straining the planet and its land and its resources and its life. One of the most important changes, all food secure, if you're food insecure, it's a different story, but if you're a food secure American, one of the most important changes we can make is to reduce our consumption of meat and dairy. An October 2018 article in the British newspaper The Guardian cited these statistics, quote, "Meat and dairy provide just 18% of calories and 37% of protein, and yet use the vast majority, 83% of farmland, and produce 60% of agriculture's greenhouse gases." So in other words, what we get from it is way, way less than what it takes to produce it. Plants are a far, far more efficient way to produce and consume, because when we raise the plant and then give it to the animal burns off lots of energy to live. If we just ate the plant directly, it would close that gap between what it takes and what we get. So the article later continues, "Without meat and dairy consumption, global farmland use could be reduced by more than 75%, an area equivalent to the US, China, European Union, and Australia combined, and yet still feed the whole planet. Global meat consumption has doubled in the last 50 years and has greatly contributed to a rise in habitat loss and greenhouse emissions." Here's a statistic I found particularly staggering. 60% of all of the mammals on the planet are livestock. Another 36% are humans. Okay, so if you did that math real quick, 4% of the world's mammals are wild animals. 96% of them are us and the things we want to eat. Now, I appreciate I'm a vegetarian who strives to be vegan at least 99% of the time, talking to a room of mostly omnivores, but what I'm saying, however, is not propaganda from a vegan and an animal lover. This is ecological truth that's been well established by science. The impact of meat and dairy on all aspects of the environment is ecological fact. It's not my personal plant-eating agenda, but that is why I became a plant eater. Well, what if humanity, affluent overconsumers particularly, do not make changes? Well, if we do not, the rate of biodiversity will continue, perhaps even increase, resulting in an ecological impact that we cannot yet fully appreciate. Here's something else I was unaware of until I was writing this homily, but it's a pretty staggering thing to think about. Biodiversity loss rivals climate change and pollution for its environmental impact. Right. So it's just as devastating as pollution and as climate change, but it's perhaps a less talked about or perhaps forgotten part of ecology, but it's no less important. So without those changes, we will probably increase food insecurity, particularly those who are already the most vulnerable at home and abroad. We could be facing environmental collapses in many ecosystems and regions, perhaps even planetarily. Our choices, and that's up to us, our daily choices directly impact the living conditions and continued existence of all beings, plant, animal, and human. We have a role to play in seeing which one of these images we want to have. A natural utopia or dystopia. Without change, our children, our grandchildren, will inherit a world that is far less rich, with many beautiful, remarkable, unique plants and animals existing, like the dodo, only in media and memory. So the relationship our children and grandchildren get to have with nature could potentially be even more ruptured than ours, with a ruptured place in their interdependent web of existence, a compromise of their appreciation of nature's diversity and beauty and mystery. I brought Diana along with me, you noticed. It was probably almost exactly a year ago that I first brought her. If you know your mythology well, she's the Roman goddess of animals. That's why I brought her along today to bless our homily about biodiversity and animals. So, I plan to continue to do what I pledged to Ranger Rick in the 1970s, to use my hands to help protect the soil, water, woods, and wildlife. And please join with me so that we can all become weavers and not destroyers of the interdependent web of life that we so value as you use. Nature and its creatures are calling to us. May we hear them.